Jump shot. It's good. Zach Randolph does it again. 3-point game. They've got to go for three now. No choice. Conley for three. Ties it up.
First team all defense. First team all defense.
Here's Gasol from outside. Tony Allen. Shot clock at four. Randolph puts it up. Puts it in.
You are Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On Grizzlies Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Mark King, for this show. A Wednesday edition of the show, which is usually with Amari Sankofa on Tuesdays, but today it's on Wednesday because honestly, I just wasn't sure when he was coming home from LA, so I went ahead and knocked a show out yesterday. But have no fear, Amari is with us today. Amari, what's going on, man?
Going pretty good. Still a little tired, honestly. I guess that 2-hour difference from LA to Memphis was a little bit more significant than it should, but. Beyond that, no complaints. Everything's going pretty well. How about you?
That's a tough flight. I've made it several times coming back home, especially if you come back home late at night. It's tough, but want to have you on talk about the Grizzlies. Obviously, there's a little bit of news of the weekend. The Grizzlies lost two of the better players to injury, and the Grizzlies have been pretty much injury free all year. They really haven't been bitten by the injury bug, which is, you know, just not going to happen. You're not going to go an entire year without having some sort of injury. And so it's just kind of the nature of the beast in the NBA, and it's hitting at a more difficult time. So we're going to talk about that with Amari. We're going to talk about some kind of lineups and then this offense as well. The Grizzlies are really struggling right now, but let's start with the biggest news in Brandon Clark. Brandon Clark is at a quadriceps injury. Will be reevaluated in 2 weeks, kind of on the same timeline with Jaren Jackson Jr. in terms of the reevaluate in 2 weeks and then kind of see where they go. But how do the Grizzlies, how do they combat being down two of their best bigs on the team? And quite frankly, in Jaren Jackson Jr., the best 3-point shooter and their best defender.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of just need to throw away the script that they kind of followed up into the season and really try some new things. I think we have seen enough of Jonas, Kyle, and Brennan playing together to know that they don't play very well together because they none of them shoot threes. Kyle and Brennan prefer to slash and work within the paint a little bit more, and it just wasn't working. So when Taylor Jenkins started Brandon Clark on Monday, I wasn't that surprised, but I was a little bit surprised only because obviously with Jaren out as well and Dylan Brooks, who should probably be taking more threes anyway, being in a slump, you need to do something to kind of counter that. And playing Brandon, Kyle, and the others together with Dylan and Ja doesn't do that. So I'm not going to say that it's a blessing in disguise for Brandon to be out because Brandon's one of their best players and they beat him, especially with Jaren out for 2 weeks as well. But it gives Taylor an opportunity to just try some new things. No more of the old rotation. Play Kyle at the four more. Play Josh Jackson at the four more. Let's see some small lineups. Let's see Kyle at the five, with some combination of D'Anthony Miller and then Josh on the court with him. Let's just throw out the old book. If they want to hold on to this AC, then they need to find some new things that work. So if you can't shoot, you need to run, you need to do everything that get the ball in the hoop. So that's pretty much where they're at right now.
So you think going small for the Grizzlies is the best path forward until you get Jaren and Brandon back?
Yeah, they need to go small. I just don't think that, the way that this roster is constructed, that, going big is the way to go. We saw Taylor play Jaren and Valanciunas together a bit. I think that's just doubling down on what already has not been been working. I think I wrote this yesterday, actually, but the lineup featuring Ja, Dylan, Kyle, Josh, and Valanciunas, I believe, has been good in limited minutes. You know, like JV, obviously, like you're not playing small when you do that, but it does give you four guys in, you know, Ja, Dylan, Josh, and Kyle who can get up and down the court. So, yeah, they just need to kind of capitalize and focus on what their strengths are. And those strengths are of running and passing. If you can't shoot, then at least double down on some of the other things that afloat.
Is that lineup more about, like you mentioned, is that lineup more about the four guys that can run and shoot than it is Valanciunas? Like, could you put Jang in there and still probably had the same effect? Or do you think Jonas Valanciunas adds something to that lineup?
No, I think you could put Jang in there and be good as well, because Jang's been really, really good in the 2 weeks that we've seen him. And Jang is actually a little bit more of a willing shooter than Valanciunas is. I mean, neither of them are, you know, willing three-point shooters, I would say, but Jang is slightly better. So I haven't checked the numbers for when you swap Jang and Valanciunas, but it's hard for me to see there being any drop-off there. I think either guy, as long as you're surrounded with guys who can get up and down the court, you should probably be in better shape than you would be playing those two big guys together.
Is there anything to – do you make anything of D'Anthony Melton and Tyus Jones playing so well together? Do you make anything of keeping them together on the bench, coming off the bench together? Or does it matter? Do you think Melton in the starting lineup is a better look in terms of defense early on? Or I guess the question is, what do you do with Melton? Is he better coming off the bench, or is he better stopping defenses early on in the starting unit?
At this point, I don't know if they have the depth to justify leaving D'Anthony Melton on the bench. Either he or Josh Jackson need to be bumped up, and there's an argument that both of them could be bumped up. D'Anthony Melton's also been slumping a little bit, too, in the last few weeks offensively, which, you know, it's just weird. Like, the team is collectively been in a huge slump. Ja, D'Anthony, Dylan, like none of these guys have been shooting the ball that well. But at this point, like, I would move D'Anthony Melton to the starting lineup for sure. If you have a starting five of Ja, D'Anthony, you put Dylan at the three, you have Josh at the four, you're probably in good shape. And that would, of course, bump Kyle Anderson down. But Kyle Anderson hasn't been a great fit with all the guys anyway. I think with D'Anthony, D'Anthony and Tyus operate pretty well together. But I think that bench unit's just good at getting up and down the floor. And you know, and D'Anthony's been fine alongside Ja, too. You know, I don't think you have to keep D'Anthony on the bench for him to be effective. At this point, you're just looking at combinations that can just get some energy into the starting five. So I think moving D'Anthony up would definitely accomplish that.
Let's take a quick break. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with more from Amari Sankofa talking about this Grizzlies offense and what they can do to get back on the right track. Welcome back to the show. Talk with Amari Sankofa like we do every single week from The Athletic. You mentioned a little bit about Kyle Anderson before we took a break. And I tweeted this yesterday. I talked about this on the show yesterday as well. Do you think that Kyle Anderson, you know, obviously, you know, they're not, the starting lineup's not playing well, but I said that I thought it was more about, you know, more about the problems with Dylan not playing well, Jaren obviously not shooting well before he got hurt, now he's hurt, and then Jonas really not playing well either, than it was about Kyle Anderson being in the starting lineup. Like, I think those three things kind of shine a light more on the Kyle Anderson being in the starting lineup, but that's not necessarily the problem. The problem is you have three of your five starters just really not playing like you wanted them to play, or playing like they were in January. Now, in January, they're shooting lights out and probably playing a little bit above what they normally would do, but do you think that's more? I mean, what's your thoughts on that? Is it more about Kyle Anderson need to go to the bench, or are those starters starting lineups more about the other people around him?
I think it has more to do with the people around him. Kyle, I mean, of course, before this recent stretch, they were undefeated with Kyle Anderson in the starting lineup. So it's not like they haven't succeeded with Kyle as it started before. It certainly says more that, you know, Jaren is currently hurt and that Dylan hasn't been shooting the ball well at all. And even Josh bumped from outside, and he was never a prolific outside shooter, but he's only hit three of his last 23-pointers. I think those things make Kyle Anderson's shortcomings greater because he's not a shooter either. So, you know, you have another guy in the starting lineup who kind of doubles down on what the team has already done pretty well, but even makes it tougher to shoot and generate good looks from outside. So, no, I wouldn't blame Kyle for that alone. With that said, when those guys are having the issues that they're having, it's not like Kyle's going to do a whole lot to fix that, which, you know, is why I think there's an argument for you taking Kyle out and, you know, bumping the guy against the mountain up who, you know, is a little bit more aggressive of a scorer. You know, does a lot of the same things as Kyle, but, you know, but honestly just a little bit better, you know, with the advantage of him being obviously a much better athlete, a much quicker guy, a little bit more dynamic in transition. I think there's just an opportunity that way. So, no, I wouldn't put this on Kyle at all. They succeeded with Kyle in the starting lineup in the past. You know, it's just that, I think from a fit standpoint, Kyle doesn't really do a whole lot to fix what's been wrong with the starting lineup. So from that sense, then, yeah, I think you would look at him swap him out with somebody else.
And we saw on against the Clippers on Monday that Taylor Jenkins still played quite a few people. Do you think that's going to continue with Taylor Jenkins? Will we see more John Conchar? Do you think his rotation stays at 10 guys like he has had pretty much all year? Or does he shorten that rotation and try to go with, you know, I guess there's two ways you can do it. You can continue to run and play those guys, or probably shorten your rotation and limit the, you know, limit the amount of, I guess, quote unquote, worst players that are playing at the end of your bench. You know, like it is next man up, so to speak, in terms of the rotation. But sometimes those next mans are not as good as the previous person, obviously. So do you think he still continues to go 10 deep tonight against the Rockets? Or is this something we might see finally, he might go the opposite way to shorten the rotation?
You know, it's tough for me to predict what Taylor would do. But I do think that at this point you should be looking at shortening the rotation rather than getting more guys in there. I think Monday was, you know, maybe not a great you know, game to take away what Taylor's going to do from this point forward, only because the Grizzlies were down almost 40 points for the first quarter. So he did some things in that game that we may not see him go back to in the next couple of weeks. You know, I don't know if we're going to see a lot of Jordan Bell. You know, I don't know if we're going to see a lot of John Conchar. But at this point, I think it would certainly make more sense to shorten the rotation and just get your best guys out there and get them out there for more minutes. You know, I mean, Ja has yet to average more than 30 minutes a game in a month this season. You know, if Ja isn't playing 33, 34 the next couple of weeks, you know, is that the worst thing? Probably not. D'Anthony Melton, another guy that could, you know, certainly benefit probably from more minutes. You know, like at this point, the rotation, you know, you have John Morant, Dylan Brooks, Jonas, Josh Jackson, James, Tyus, Anthony Melton, Kyle Anderson. You know, that's eight right there. You should probably have nine. You know, so maybe that is Jordan Bell. Maybe you give Marco a little bit more run if you get some shooting out of him. You know, but the rotation's short right now, obviously. You know, I would probably see if you could get some shooting from Marco, just because you need somebody who has a chance to hit some shots from outside. You know, Marco is probably a much better bet in that regard than Jordan Bell, just because at least Marco had that track record overseas in the EuroLeague. You know, like the entire time he was there, he's a pretty good outside shooter, so he can do it. But yeah, at this point, you know, probably makes more sense to keep the rotation at about nine guys. You know, just give your best guys more minutes and hope that it can get you through the next 2 weeks.
What do you make of Dylan Brooks' shooting slump? I mean, obviously he was shooting, I think I tweeted this the other night, is what, the 35% in December and November, 45% in January, which I mentioned is probably a little higher than his normal clip, but then 18% in February. What do you make of his month-long shooting slump? I mean, I know that everybody goes to slumps, but that seems like a long one for most people. But what do you make of that?
It is. I mean, Dylan Brooks is a pretty extreme player. I think, you know, that's what we should consider. He had, I think I was 2 months of shooting about 45% from outside, you know, which, you know, was an outlier, you know, when you compare it to how he had shot the ball from outside before in his career. And he's always been a solid three-point shooter, but, I mean, but he was basically a top, you know, 8 or 9 shooter in the NBA for about 2 months there. So he was due for a regression. I don't think anybody could have reasonably expected a regression of this magnitude, because he's basically going from being the best shooter in the league to the worst shooter in the league in that same, you know, like pretty much for the entire month of February, as you said. So it's tough to say exactly what's going on there. You know, it coincides with his extension to an extent, but not totally. You know, you look at the stat lines, that Pelicans game on the 31st, he struggled. Then actually before he signed the extension, the night of the Dallas game on February 5th, he didn't play that great that night either. So I wouldn't blame it solely on the extension. He kind of began to come down a little bit right before he signed it. I can't really say whether or not the extension is the reason why he's struggling right now, although I'm sure that, you know, signing a contract for $35 million, I mean, that's a life-changing sum of money. You know, I'm sure if I signed a contract that big, I wouldn't be in the right headspace for a few weeks. But, you know, it's concerning. I don't know if it's going to last the rest of the season. You know, I'm sure the Grizzlies hope certainly that it will not. But they need him to bounce back. They're 16-1. He scores 20 or more points. And it's very, very bad when he doesn't even score 10 points. So their fortunes have been tied to him all season. And they certainly felt his slump over the last couple of weeks. So the sooner he bounces back, the better this team has, the better chance this team has to hold on to that AC.
Do you think it's more about taking, I mean, they're not taking as many threes, but do you think it's more about taking less open threes? Like, it seems like they're taking a lot more contested threes than they were before. I don't know if that's true or not. That's just what it feels like watching the offense every night.
Well, they're not getting as clean looks because they don't have any, you know, truly expected three-point threats out there, so they're going to be easier to defend. But they're also not even taking the semi-contested ones. Like several times a possession, you'll see Jai have some space to shoot, and he'll take the ball and drive it instead, or Brandon Clark will do the same thing. Giannis Antetokounmpo will do the same thing. None of these guys are willing three-point shooters. Even Tyus Jones, you know, these guys tend to default to taking the ball inside because that's what they're most comfortable doing. I don't know if the looks have been that much more contested, but they just haven't generated those looks because they don't have a go-to guy from the perimeter. It's a bit easier when you have a guy like Jaren out there who's taking more than six a game, hanging him at a good clip. You know, I think that opens things up a little bit more for everybody else. So this just isn't a team that enjoys shooting threes. That's probably the best way I could put it. All these guys like to default to driving inside. And I think if we did see Ja, Brennan, Jonas Valanciunas, just shoot threes when they have a little bit of space. You know, don't overthink it. Don't second guess it. Just release the ball immediately. We would see the offensive numbers for these Niners pick up a little bit, but these guys just aren't willing three-point shooters, so I think it makes the court even more cramped than it would be because when Giannis takes threes, he does hit them at a decent rate. You know, I'm saying for Brandon Clark and for most of the season, Chai as well. This year hasn't been accuracy, it's just been volume. So they have to let go of that urge to be forced to take the ball inside and take some risky threes. You know, you may be a step behind the three-point line. You get one to fall, that's going to change how you're being defended the next time. So that's something that Taylor's preached. And these guys are just basically going against their nature, basically. So I think that's a big reason why the spacing has been so bad, not just because they haven't been generating looks, but because they don't take them.
Let's take another quick break. We'll be right back. We'll finish up with Amari Sinkova from The Athletic. Talking with Amari Sinkova from The Athletic like we always do every single week. We're talking about three-point, or I guess the offense, and shooting the threes before we took a break. The Grizzlies have taken right around 30. In the month of December, they took 35 threes a game, or averaged 35 threes a game. And then January, November, they took averaging 30. In February, they're averaging only just 23. Why do you think they're taking, I mean, obviously, you can't make them if you don't take them, but why do we suddenly see a drop off of, you know, 7-8 less threes per game in this month than they had in the previous three? Is that a confidence thing for you, or is it a flow of the offense? What do you pinpoint the terms of just the amount of threes they're just taking in general?
Well, I think part of that is just, you know, the moves they made at the trade deadline. Jay Crowder was a volume three-point shooter. Solomon Hill took a good amount of shots from outside. And both of those guys no longer on the team, and they replaced them with Gorgui Dieng, who is not a violent three-point shooter, and Justice Winslow, who, you know, is not only just not a violent three-point shooter, but hasn't played a game for the Grizzlies yet. So just through that, they lost some guys who were a big part of them getting up to 30-plus attempts a game. So I think a drop-off just from that respect is probably likely. But on top of that, you lose Jaren Jackson, who is your biggest violent three-point shooter, and Dylan Brooks has been flopping, and Dylan doesn't take as many threes as he should, but he still is, I believe, top four or five on the team in attempts per game, if not higher. So that also hurts you. You have Ja, you have Dylan, you have Kyle, you have Brandon Clark, who's on the bench and is starting, and four of those five guys are toward the bottom of the team and the total percentage of shot attempts that they take from three per game. So I think the issue is just an issue of roster construction more than anything. When you replace guys who like shooting threes with guys who don't like shooting threes, I mean, that's just basically what's going to happen. So they have to figure out exactly how to get these guys who don't take a lot of threes to take more threes, basically. It's not an issue of, you know, guys who were playing well before just not taking threes anymore. It's just you have a team full of guys who aren't taking them.
To further your point, you know, pre-All-Star break, they took they averaged 31.1 threes per game. Post-All-Star break, they averaged 24. And Jay Crowder alone, I think he took like five a game. So, you know, to really hit home what you're saying, it's just – you send out guys that are shooting, you know, shooting several threes a game and replace them with people who don't is that's obviously a recipe for what you get. So my last question, and I'll get you out of here along those same lines. If you replace those guys with guys who don't shoot threes, how do the Grizzlies go from here? What do they grow from here? How do they fix this offense? What is their best course of action in terms of getting on the right side of things and getting their offense clicking again?
Well, I need Jaren back for one. Jaren's pretty much the only three-point shooter.
Having one of your best players helps. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, no Jaren means that. I mean, even the 23 a game was with Jaren in the starting lineup because Jaren was by a wide margin the highest by a three-point shooter on this roster. So with him gone, the issue is one that might be hard to overcome. But they just have to play to their strength. They're, you know, like one of the best two or three passing teams in the league. So they have to generate looks elsewhere, whether it's through cuts, whether it's just attacking the transition. You certainly have to do that. Their pace isn't quite what it was before. So you just have to build on what's already been working, essentially. Instead of going big, see if you can create more transition opportunities. I think playing D'Anthony Bellin, who creates a lot of turnovers, with fix some issues just in that if you can generate more of those transition looks, it just helps the offense that much better. So they have to capitalize on those things. You know, they have to make the game a little bit easier for guys like Ja, too, who has not been shooting well from outside. And he hasn't been passing as much either. And I just think the lack of spacing has limited his ability to generate certain passing angles that he had before. You know, I wouldn't go as far as to say he's slumping, but he certainly hasn't been as aggressive as he was before. So just double down on what's been working. Play the guys who have played well in spite of the recent slump. That's what matters for Jaren, and that's what matters for Josh Jackson, and play those guys more. I think Taylor typically leans toward relying on what's worked in the past and what's been comfortable in the past. They don't really have a huge margin for error with 25 games left, so. You know, Jenkins and the coaching staff have to sit down and figure out what's been working over the last week or so and double down on that.
So the long and short of it is get good players. That's what I mean. It's different, but you're right. It's you're right though. Like you can't, it's hard to expect a lot of things when you know, one of your best two players is not playing and one of your best role players is not playing. And then the guy you traded for who you thought was going to be, who is supposed to be a big part of this offense in the future as well, hasn't played a game either. So you have two top role players. And I'd say one of your best, one of two best players on the team not playing. you know, it's difficult to win any games, really. And that's just the long and short of it. So, to your point, yes, you know, I think you're right. You got to get healthy, got to get the players back, and everything will probably fall back into place. Amari, what can people read from you this week?
So I have 25 starts for the Grizzlies, last 25 games up today, which, I mean, a lot of thoughts, obviously, as folks could probably tell from today's pie. Then me and Peter Edison should be putting together another Optimist Pessimist for the end of the week, where we've done it every month this season, where we basically just express our thoughts. Playing roles, obviously, like usually, you know, I'd be the optimistic one, and Peter would be the pessimistic one. On three or four topics of the season, and we just sort of do a good cop, bad cop on it. So that should come out by Saturday.
Fantastic, man. I'm looking forward to reading that. And the piece that you did on Josh Jackson was fantastic as well. So make sure you guys go check out Amari's stuff over at The Athletic. Him and Peter do a great job covering the Grizzlies. It's not much money at all. I promise you, you wouldn't even notice come out of your bank account. It's definitely worth it. Go check out their stuff. I promise it's great. If you're not already subscribed to the podcast, make sure you do that so you don't miss conversations like this and others coming up throughout the week every single day. Amari, I appreciate it. I'll see you Friday. We'll do it again next week.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, as always, Mark.